Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Goddess, the kids, and welcome. Thank you for tuning in to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, the extended edition. I'm Karen Tate, your host, and that delightful musical tease you've just been listening to was Breath of Passion by Zingaya. I'm so glad so many of you are listening to our current series, For Mothers and Wayshowers, and thanks for all the great feedback that's been coming in. Your appreciation and the stimulation from our wonderful guests makes the effort to facilitate this series worthwhile. Tonight, our esteemed guest is Genevieve Vaughn, popular for her gift economy ideas, and she's also the founder of the Sekhmet Temple outside Las Vegas, and we're going to be talking about both those things, gift economy and Sekhmet. She's calling in tonight thanks to the wonders of Skype from Italy, where it's actually 3 a.m., so I'm very grateful she's staying up with us to do the show. We take a break for Thanksgiving next week, so we won't be on the air Wednesday, but we'll be back the first Wednesday of December with Patricia Monahan. And to keep you updated on new guests to the Four Mothers and Wayshower series, we've just booked Christina Biaggi, Heidi Gottner-Abendroth, who edited the new book everyone's talking about, Societies of Peace, Matriarchies, Past, Present, and Future. She's going to be calling from Europe. And then Michael York, who just presented at the American Academy of Religion, who will also be at the Parliament of World Religions, talking on his topic, Men Who Love the Goddess. He'll be calling in from Amsterdam. So if you're new to Voices of the Sacred Feminine here on Blog Talk, we can take your caller questions. If you like, dial in and ask questions toward the end of the interview. The number is 718-766-4662. When I see your call on the switchboard, I'll identify you by your area code and welcome you to have a chance to ask our guest a question. And if you can't listen live or don't want to be on the air, you can always email me some of your questions in advance, as many have done for tonight's show with Genevieve Vaughn. But keep tuning in each Wednesday night at 6. Don't miss us. In fact, if you don't know already, you can join Blog Talk as a listener, and they'll send reminders to your email box of our shows. And then you won't forget about our guests each week. And please, if you like what you hear, become a fan of the show, indicate that by selecting us as a favorite on Blog Talk Radio. Well, now it's time for that What's the Buzz segment, when we talk about what's happening out there in the world related to goddess advocates or issues related to women, girls, and ideas of the sacred feminine. The first thing I'd like to share is from Phyllis Chesler organization blog. She lets us know that Canada to Immigrants, No Tolerance for Honor Killings, is the name of this new entry on her blog. Apparently on November 13th, Pajamas Media, which is part of Phyllis Chesler's organization, reports the Canadian government has just revamped its citizenship guide for immigrants. The document is titled The Rights and Responsibilities of Canadian Citizenship, according to Canada's National Post. It says, in Canada, men and women are equal under the law. Canada's openness and generosity does not extend to barbaric cultural practices that tolerate spousal abuse, honor killings, female genital mutilation, or other gender-based violence. Those guilty of these crimes are severely punished under Canada's criminal laws. Western governments are beginning to wake up to dangerous or barbaric practices among immigrants, especially among Muslim immigrants. Whether such practices are pre-Islamic, non-Islamic, even anti-Islamic, and people have argued all of the above, the truth is that certain barbaric practices are most often committed by Muslims against Muslims, Sikhs, and Hindus, to a much lesser extent, also commit honor murders. The other thing I'd like to share in What's the Buzz comes from change.org, and it says, The American Myth of Women's Equality by Jen Nadeau on the blog change.org. It says, The White House Project released a report on Friday that dispels what seems to be an American myth about women's equality by offering 132 pages of benchmarks to truthfully describe where women stand in a variety of sectors. The report describes how much of the general public believes that women's fight for parity in the workforce has already been won, but goes on to say that women are still noticeably absent from the boardrooms and the executive suites. Due to the economic slowdown, it's made it harder for everyone to move ahead, and women's progress up the ladder and through the glass ceiling is seemingly stalled. They say today women account for only 18% of our top leaders and make 78.7 cents to every dollar earned by a man, which is a wage gap that increases with age. Here were additional benchmarks presented in the report that support the fact that women have not achieved equality. In business, among Fortune 500 companies, women constitute only 3% of CEOs, 6% of the top-paying positions, and 16% of corporate officers. In film, women constitute 16% of all directors, executive producers, writers, cinematographers. This represents a slight decrease and their representation in these positions in the last decade. In journalism, women of color account for less than 17% of female news staff and only 6% of newsroom staff overall. In law, despite being nearly half, 48% of law school graduates, women make up only 18% of law partners and only 1 in 4 judges. In the military, women make up 11% of the officers in the top 5 officer categories today and 15% of all military officers. In nonprofits, women CEOs of nonprofits have been losing ground relative to men in terms of salaries. Female CEOs now only make 66% of male salaries compared with 71% in 2000. And in state politics, there are only 6 women governors, and women comprise only 15% of mayors of cities with populations of over 100,000. So ladies, especially you young ladies who aren't too keen on embracing feminism, this is why we still need feminism. Okay. As a reminder, each week I consistently have this segment opening the show because we have to inoculate ourselves against the patriarchal programming. We have to constantly educate, whether we're talking about women's issues, politics, goddess advocates, earth-based spirituality, because the other side never rests. We have to be on our toes and fight ignorance, intolerance, and those insidious isms. We have to embrace that archetype Sekhmet, healer, warrioress, goddess of discernment, courage, and tenacity manifested. Okay, the bees have been released from my bonnet for another week. And now to our guest tonight, Jen Vaughn. Let me tell you a little bit about her extensive background, just in case you don't know a lot about her yet. She's an independent researcher. In 1963, she married Ferruccio Rossi Landi. If I said that wrong, I hope she'll correct me. And she moved with him from her native Texas to Italy, where they had 3 daughters. Her 2 early essays, Communication and Exchange and Saussure and Vygotsky via Marx, deal with language and economics, a theme she has been working on throughout her adult life. After her divorce, in 1978, Vaughn became a feminist, participating in the Italian and international feminist movements. She began to see the fact of free women's labor in the home as gift-giving, an unacknowledged free economy of women from which communication and community derive. Her first book, Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange, was published in 1997. In 83, Vaughn returned to Texas, where she started the Foundation for a Compassionate Society, an all-woman activist foundation which initiated many innovative projects in an attempt to practice the gift economy according to the political use of, I think it's 20 women's values. The foundation closed its doors in 2005 after two final international conferences. She's got a lot going on. She's edited two books, and we're going to talk more about all of that, but we'll let Jen tell us about it herself. So thank you so much, Genevieve, for staying up tonight and being on the show with us here at Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope I can stay awake for the whole interview.
Well, I hope I didn't murder your ex-husband's name and the title of your book badly. He's an ex-husband, right? It's okay.
That's right.
let's start by talking a little bit more about the gift economy, and before the end of the show, you know, we'll talk more about the Sekhmet Temple and how that came to be, and you know, your thoughts on, you know, who Sekhmet is and all of that. But I know a lot of people have not yet discovered the gift economy. So for the layperson who's not an economist, what is it exactly?
Well, I'm actually not an economist either, but I have some definite ideas about what the economy should be like and what our society should be like. In fact, I started this foundation that was called the Foundation for a Compassionate Society, and I think really our society is cruel in so many ways. You were reading lots of statistics, and just here in Rome, they're having the World Conference on Hunger, and the statistics there are 1 in 7 people, 1 in every 7 people is hungry. And in the U.S., 49 million children are hungry. They don't have enough to eat. So our society, which, you know, is able to spend trillions of dollars on wars, is not able to feed its people. We need an economy that is compassionate, that is, it looks at needs instead of at greed. And I believe that is an economy based on mothering. It's the values of nurture instead of the values of profit and competition and domination. And so I think that all children grow up in a gift economy, because little children don't know how to exchange. They can't give you back something equivalent of what you've given them. They just have to receive what you give them. And then, I believe receiving is creative too, but giving and receiving is the basic human interaction, and we need to base our economy on that and our culture on that, rather than on giving in order to receive, which is ego-oriented. If I give you something in order to get an exchange, I'm doing an ego-oriented thing, trying to satisfy my need while I'm using yours as an instrument. And that's where we go wrong. We need to stay with the mothering economy and not go into the market. And I realize that may sound difficult at this point, also because we are so imbued and immersed in the market, but we still keep doing it all the time anyway, even though we don't appreciate direct giving and receiving. We don't believe that people are honestly giving us a real gift. We always think they want a kickback or something. Instead, we need to reevaluate all of that way of being and put it forward instead of putting forward the values that come from the market and that are really destroying our world, because nature doesn't do exchange. Nature isn't a market. Nature satisfies needs.
Well, Genevieve, let me ask you this. I don't disagree with what you're saying. I mean, the world is totally out of balance, totally screwed up. When somebody in the news recently spent $250 million for a diamond, I turned to my head and told my husband, they can spend that money for a diamond when kids are going to bed hungry and millions of people don't have clean water. This is insane, you know. But what do you tell people who, you know, or just, you know, steeped in this, you know, predatory capitalist environment, they don't think anything can change. They say, oh, well, Genevieve, maybe this is noble, but, you know, as long as there's money to be made, for instance, on war particularly, there'll never be peace. I mean, how do you answer that? Because, you know, I go out and actually give talks and try to talk about a more caring economy, and I don't always know how to answer that question.
Well, I think they're just being very short-sighted. But also I think that this kind of economy that we're in is leading us right over the edge of the cliff to disaster for everybody. Environmental disaster and also social disaster, because it's not good for anyone to be cruel. The perpetrator gets to be a worse person as well as the victim. The victim just gets destroyed. So it's really not, it's not good for us to be caught in a cruel society and a cruel economy. And I don't think it makes people happy. I mean, they may be glad to survive, but what is the cost of survival when you're driving other people into a terrible life? And that's what we've been doing. I mean, I've traveled a lot, and I see how the so-called third world or global south has suffered because of our corporations and our businesses that go there, and our policies. So I'm really somebody who has I've thought about it a lot, and I believe that women have the answer, because women have this different kind of economy that we have to practice as mothers. And that is the basic human economy. That is the human economy for men as well as women, except men drift away from it into the patriarchal capitalist way more than women do, because men don't usually have to bring up babies. Some men do, and I take off my hat to them, and it's great. But we need a system where everybody is doing nurturing rather than doing me first, profit motive activities that, you know, I mean, it's a system that is taking the gifts of everyone and giving them to a few. And that's not right. And it's also wasting all the money that could have been used for human needs on wars that don't do anything good for people. They only destroy lives and infrastructure and all of that. So the economy of war and profit take away from the nurturing economy. The nurturing economy has to be there anyway, otherwise we wouldn't live. And that's what gives us joy. It's what makes life worth living, is satisfying each other's needs.
Well, Genevieve, how does this look in practice, for instance? I mean, how does it, you know, you turn on the news, for instance, what would you hear differently, or what would a corporation do differently? You know, just in practical terms, how would things be different?
Well, there are some examples, like on the Internet now, there's lots of free software, even Skype right now that we're using is free to talk to each other. And the Internet radio, too, and the, let's say, just sending each forwarding emails is a way of communicating free, but there is just a lot on the internet that is free. Wikipedia, for example, we know about that. But also
right.
indigenous economies were free before we had the imposed markets on them. And we have really our European economic way has blotted out gift economies that have existed and that have been often in matriarchal societies as well. So I think it's really a question of the patriarchy and a wrongly conceived dominant male gender as against a mothering female gender and a female humanity or a mothering humanity. I don't say female humanity. That is, mothering is the heritage of men as well as women. And we have gotten away from that into an economy that emphasizes dominance and competition and power over. And we have to do something different. Now, I don't have present really global examples to tell you. There are corporations, businesses, socially useful investing businesses that try to do things in a fairer way. And I think that's a step in the right direction, but I really think we need a total overhaul, a total change.
Well, and, you know, they always say, you know, when things hit rock bottom, that's when, you know, that's when real change happens. And it sure feels like, you know, with the economy everywhere around the world, people are certainly looking for better ways of doing things. And I think they're tired of being exploited.
Yeah. And now people are really waking up to the fact that they have been exploited and they are continuing to be. So, and it's not doing anyone any good, even the people at the top. They may have a lot of money, but are they happy? Is it good for them to do that? No, it doesn't make them better people.
Well, you know, I often think about that, quite frankly. I mean, I'm not a rich person by any stretch of the imagination, and I often wonder what it must be like to have so much money you'll never spend it in a lifetime. You know, I wonder how those people sleep at night when they just – you know, spend so much money on excess, you know, I don't know, 5 boats and 3 houses and big diamond rings. I mean, do they ever stop and think about the suffering out there or what they really could be doing with that money, building schools or hospitals or something, you know?
Well, that's true, and I actually did have quite a bit of money, which I mostly gave away, so, because it really... It really isn't, it's not a tenable position to be in. You can't really maintain your conscience in that situation.
Well, and I think a lot of people come to, I mean, and, you know, at least I did, I'm speaking for myself here, that things, you know, just having a lot of things, you know, it really doesn't fill that you know that hole inside you, you know. For me, you know, being in service, you know, really makes me feel better about myself. As long as I have enough, I'm happy, you know. I guess I just wish more people thought that way and we could get away from the greed and the excess. It's like we have to value ourselves differently, not by how much we have in our pocketbook. I mean, is that part of the gift economy philosophy?
Sure, since I believe that gift giving is the basic human way of doing things, and that exchange comes much later, it's by when we do that, when we do gift giving, we are in alignment with our better selves or our true human selves. And so that feels good. And they've done a lot of tests now recently that show that little children do it and that they are happy to help other people and that in a way they're learning egotism as they grow up.
Right.
And And that also, they've done tests on people showing that there is a lot of physiological change when you're doing good things, and that makes you happy. And it's not that you do it for the payoff. You do it to satisfy the need, and then you are in alignment with the way you ought to be.
Well, you know, it sort of makes me think of nature in a way. I mean, if you water the soil, she then gives back to you. You know, it's a reciprocity. Am I understanding this right?
Well, I think that nature is functions along the same line, in that we have ecological niches, and so do animals and plants and so forth, that are really a question of the ability of the creature to receive what's there to nurture it. That is, the creature evolves to be able to receive the gifts that nature gives it. And it is a gift because it's certainly not an exchange. It's a way of the need being nurtured. And if the creature didn't exist, then that part of nature would not be a gift. But since the creature has evolved, then it fits with nature, and that makes a giver and a receiver, and that is the way that nature works. And all of the different parts of nature give to each other and receive from each other. So it's a huge sort of joyful collection of gifts and giving and receiving. And it's not an exchange, not a market. And we use the word exchange a lot of times when we're actually meaning gift giving and receiving, I think.
And you're not talking about barter, I don't think, either.
No, I'm not talking about barter.
Okay.
I'm talking about satisfying needs.
Right.
You know,
right.
A mother feeds her child. She sees what the child needs to eat, and she feeds it. She doesn't expect the child to give her back something. And
okay, what I was going to say was, okay, so the mother feeds the child because the child is hungry, the child needs to eat, but how does the mother get the food? I guess I'm thinking of myself, I'm trying to understand in a gift economy, how does the rent get paid and how do groceries get in the refrigerator?
Well, you have to start groups of people that produce in order to give and receive. And that it's a question of where are we going? It's not that it's easy to start doing that, although there are people that have started alternative communities where that kind of thing does happen. But we are living in the opposite economy to the gift economy,
right?
And we need to try to change it from within, from the kind of profit motive mentality, towards move it over towards a gift mentality, and then from that create a production that is production for giving and receiving, so that. Actually, we have to reconceptualize what's going on in order to move towards a really different society.
I see. Well, you know, I kind of tried to make, you know, whenever I talk about goddess, I usually talk about goddess in terms of not just deity, but also archetype and ideal. And I've interviewed Starhawk and Rhianne Eisler, and we've sort of had these conversations about goddess ideals, and we've come to the conclusion that goddess, if she had a political affiliation, would definitely be a Democrat. And I think you associate goddess with the gift economy rather than the market. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yes, I certainly think that as I'm talking about the mothering archetype, that is the archetype of the gift economy and not the archetype of the market. In fact, I don't really think there is an archetype of the market I think everybody is Homo sapiens, but not Homo sapiens, we're Homo donans, that is the giving being. And we're that because we have to give and receive before we even know as very young children. And so we're not, there is not a market archetype of the mother. The mother is in the, either nature or can be the sky, can be other parts of nature. But I think that archetype is the archetype of the gift economy. I mean, trees grow and bear fruit and are abundant, and they are gifts to everyone. And all of the different kinds of animals and creatures can use those. And that is just, that is really the archetype of the abundant goddess. And in fact,
well, you think about
the gift
Artemis.
Economy.
What? Well, you think about the multi-breasted Artemis. I think that's maybe a good example of the gift giving, in one goddess image.
Yeah, but I also just want to emphasize that the gift economy requires abundance. You can't really have it in scarcity because then it becomes self-sacrificial. And in abundance, giving and receiving is a very easy and delightful thing to do. And in scarcity, you become completely exhausted trying to satisfy needs. So the exchange economy needs the scarcity in order to dominate, whereas a gift economy needs abundance in order to nurture everyone. And if you can return to a goddess archetype, a mother goddess archetype, then we can justify and, sustain ourselves to work towards the archetype and towards the possibility of abundance.
Well, and you've also said, too, that this gift economy is a more moral system, I believe.
I wouldn't even say it's moral. I think it's prior to morality. It's the basis, the economic basis of our humanity. And that has to do with satisfying needs. What is maybe immoral is the market, because it's not about satisfying needs and leaves people to die when they are not able to exchange something. And that is happening more and more, and it's not working at all.
Well, it's a survival of the fittest mentality.
But the fittest in the market, which isn't nature. The market is not nature. It's not made according to the ways of nature.
Right.
It's made according to exchange. And so we're making ourselves try to survive in a non-natural mechanism, and that is really hurting us, and it's hurting the planet.
Right, right. So then you'd say that the gift economy is much more environmentally friendly, and I think I've actually seen something you've written that says it's eco-feminist. You've described it that way as well?
Well, I think so, yeah. I think I would say it's eco-feminist. The goddess is eco-feminist. and so it all has to do with the goddess as Mother Earth, and feminism as based on this concept of a mothering economy. I don't want to go into the physiological sides of it, or say that women are by nature nurturing or all of those things, but it's an economic mode of distribution that women are doing as mothers because it's required by the children. I mean, it's not required by the biology of the mother. It's required by the biology of the child who is too small and too weak to sustain itself. And so that is a practice that we do, an economic practice and a way of a culture that we are creating, which is stopped and stymied every time it's overwhelmed by the exchange economy or the economy based on money and capitalism.
Well, are there any practical projects of the gift economy in the United States?
Well, I was going to tell you about the Sekhmet Temple during the time that I did this Foundation for a Compassionate Society, we had quite a few projects. We had a retreat center near Austin, Texas called Stonehaven Ranch, and we had another retreat center that eventually I donated to the Indigenous Women's Network called Alma de Mujer Center for Social Change. And there were a number of other projects, media projects and so forth. And the one project that has remained is, although some of those projects did, but the one that I have continued to maintain as a gift economy project is the Temple of Sekhmet, which is in Cactus Springs, Nevada. It's about 60 miles outside of Las Vegas. And it's a free space, and there's a space for people to come and stay, guest house and so forth there.
Okay.
And there's a priestess who does ritual on all of the new moons and the full moons and all of the holy days and so forth. And so it's an ongoing gift economy project there.
And were there societies where gift economies are already practiced?
Well, there are in the indigenous economies. They were, many indigenous economies were and still are gift-based economies. And they were, many of them were women-centered or women with women councils that decided on who got what when and who needed to do what work and all of that kind of thing. And for example, the Iroquois did that. And that was quite an exciting thing for me to hear about that at first, when I first heard about it. But there are also many others, and they are those societies are just as old as our society, and so they have developed in many different ways. And sometimes they have had patriarchal themes in them as well, and sometimes there have been symbolic gift circles and that sort of thing, which often involved mostly men. But mothering has happened throughout the ages and has had to happen, and so it has also been a source of the economy. And it's the exchange economy, which is the strange thing, whereas the gift economy is the basis. I mean, I was just thinking about the other day about the Arawak and Taino, who were the societies that Columbus first encountered. And he said, oh, they are so generous. Well, they were practicing the gift economy. And he brought in a whole other kind of way of being, in which he slaughtered so many of them, which didn't understand the gift economy at all. And also, I mean, in our whole European, what do you call it, advance, I don't know if you want to call it that, it has been based on the misogyny and the slavery of women, or the putting down of women, as well as the slavery of other races. And in fact, the Columbus came to the Americas right at the same time of the witch burnings in Europe. And so we have that, both of those terrible histories together.
Colliding and, right there at once, yeah.
Yeah, and so what it is that an economy and a way of being, which is human, is kind of underneath a kind of economy which is invades it or is above it and takes from it, and so that is what has happened to the indigenous economy, is that they have been wiped out by our European capitalist economy. And some have not been wiped out, some have remained, but it's not, you know, it's hard for them because they have been made also to live in scarcity and been put on reservations and so forth. So it's
right.
not easy to keep on doing that, but some do.
Well, in a pertinent subject, really, with Thanksgiving next week, you know, when you think about the myth versus the reality of what actually went on between the Indians and the Pilgrims, because had it not been for the gift-giving and generosity of these indigenous people, like you're saying, the Pilgrims would never have survived.
Right, exactly. And that happened over and over again, and I think we need to learn the lesson from that, to not keep on doing it. And yet we do. And we have done that economically into going into the global south with our corporations and taking what's left of the gifts that they still had, three things they still had, like water and even air is being traded for debt for nature swaps, where the jungles that used to produce or still produce oxygen, was they get tax deductions and all of that, and when they swap with other countries, swap off amounts of trade capacity. And
Well, Genevieve, I can't help but make the comment, and this is my comment. No, you know, you may disagree, but I'm sitting here thinking about the irony and the hypocrisy that, you know, so many of these people who have dominated, obliterated, wiped out these gift-giving people were good Christians. You know, it's like for some reason, because they were heathens or something, I guess in their mind they could justify just, you know, they totally overlooked their generosity, probably saw it as weakness, and, you know, a way to infiltrate and conquer. It's sad, really, when, you know, these people are not really practicing, you know, what they say their God teaches them. And I guess that hypocrisy bothers me. And I don't know. So I just felt compelled to bring it up.
I think you're right. There's a way that we compartmentalize, you know, and we don't look, we turn our face away and don't look at what's actually going on. And so that happens with, it seems hard to imagine how somebody could be Christian and going in and slaughtering and taking slaves and so forth, but they have. And I mean, it's hard to think of somebody being Christian and killing the witches,
or just the oppression of women that happens today.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have a huge, huge evangelical church down in Southern California, big famous church, and you know they're practicing what they call the new feminism, and they tell the women, well, grounds for divorce or abandonment and adultery, but not abuse. You know, it's just it's just insane. You know, it just feels like shameful hypocrisy. But well, let's you know, switch gears a little bit here and talk a little bit more about the Sekhmet Temple. We have a good segue here. That was part of one of the practical projects of the gift economy. People could go there and stay free. I know I've actually been there a number of times, you know, in my travels to Las Vegas. I've known all the priestesses there. In your own words, Genevieve, how did you come to build that temple there to Sekhmet? You know, I know the story, but I don't know that all my listeners do.
Well, when I married the Italian philosophy professor that I married back in 1963, we wanted to have children right away, and we didn't. And several years passed, and I was getting really worried. Well, we took a trip to Egypt and went to Luxor, and we were down and went down these steps, at the bottom of these steps in the sort of a dark chamber, and the guide said, this is the goddess here, the goddess sitting here, this is the goddess of fertility. So if you make her a promise, you'll get pregnant. And so I did. It was Sekhmet, and I always remembered who it was because I made her a promise. I promised I would build her a temple if I could get pregnant. And after about a week, I got pregnant. It was just amazing. And so I knew I had to build this temple. I had to do what I promised. And I kind of put it off for a while. But when I went to Nevada to protest at the nuclear test site out there, I thought this is the place where we ought to build the temple to Sekhmet. And I looked around for quite a while for some land there and finally found this 20 acres there at Cactus Springs, which is near Indian Springs, on the way to the nuclear test site at Mercury, and I bought it, and I got some young people, an affinity group of young people called Chaos, and they built the temple out of straw bale and stucco construction, an environmentally appropriate construction, and then I had some copper hoops made for the roof and some turrets made by out of ceramics. And so it really worked. And I gave the land back to the Western Shoshone, who used to own the land all out there. And I had bought it from somebody else who bought it from somebody else and somebody else, but I gave it back to the Shoshone. And we had the restoration of the land ceremony in 1992, and it was around the October 12th time. So it was really quite moving to be able to give back even a tiny little piece of land to the indigenous people on the anniversary of the 500th anniversary of Columbus's invasion of the Americas, and so that was very very exciting and thing to do, which made me very happy, and so we've had the temple there ever since, and lots of people go to it. Anyone can go. You can drive out there. It's about 60 miles outside of Las Vegas, and there are rituals and ceremonies, and all the time there's a website, there's always a priestess there who lives out there, and there's a guest house that people can stay in, and so there you are.
Well, it's a beautiful place to go. I'd really recommend anyone who is maybe visiting in Las Vegas and want to take a break from that craziness of the Strip and just sort of experience the land and a little bit of spirituality, actually, you know, take a little car trip and just sort of drop into that sacred space there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space, and there the mountains are in the distance, and this is a little oasis. There's some trees there, and it's really quite beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It really is, and there's a seated statue of Sekhmet in the temple and a fire pit in the middle. Is it true that you have crystals from Taos in those copper rods that are on top of the those decorative copper rods on top of the temple roof?
Yeah, they're crystals. That's right.
Right. So Genevieve, what is your concept of goddess or goddesses after that experience with Sekhmet? Or do you see her not just as ideal or archetype, but do you think of her as a deity?
Yeah, I was just thinking about talking to you about this. I've been very struck recently by the idea that there are 500 billion galaxies, and each galaxy has a billion stars in it. Can you imagine how huge the universe is? And I remember when, some years ago, when I first went back to Texas, somebody had written a big sign on the wall that said, local deities. And I believe that that there are local deities, and that Mother Earth really is a deity, and that there are many other deities on the earth and spirits of nature here, and that Sekhmet is one, and probably there are a number of aspects of Sekhmet that are out there, and you kind of can relate to whoever you are in tune with. And so I'm, as I said, particularly I relate to Mother Earth, Kuan Yin, Yemaya. These are goddesses that I pray to or contact on a daily basis. And I think the multiplicity of goddesses is important, because we have the monotheism that works in a hierarchical way with patriarchy and with oppressive governments. So it's a one-to-many sort of structure. And the goddesses are many-to-many. And so that puts us in a whole other mind frame, I think.
Right.
That outside of the dominant one, or the dominant singular one.
Yeah, I usually tell people she's the poster girl for diversity. You know, by her many names and faces across continents and cultures. You know, doesn't matter which of the goddesses we relate to, we can all stand under that same umbrella, you know, that same umbrella of the she of 10,000 names, you know, the feminine face of God, you know, and it's not, you know, my God is the only God, and let's have a fatwa or a crusade or an inquisition to fight the guy across the way because his God isn't real.
Exactly. There are a lot of those patriarchal concepts that fit together. And that fit together with the market. I mean, money is a sort of God too that we need to not believe in.
Right. Well, you know, I find myself writing over and over in articles, you know, political articles, economic articles. You know, people are genuflecting at the altar of greed and exploitation today. You know, and greed and exploitation seems to be their God. But, well, Genevieve, you've been walking your talk, certainly, with this gift economy. Besides the Compassionate Society and the Sekhmet Temple, people can go to your website and get a lot of free stuff, too, right?
Yeah, it's www.gift-economy.com. You've got to put gift-economy in there because otherwise you won't find it.
And there's a film about your life out too, Giving for Giving.
Yeah.
Is that available?
That's right. Yeah, you can get that on the online also.
Okay. Well, have we covered everything you think is important? I mean, did we leave out anything that you want to make sure listeners know or that you feel is important to share?
Oh, but one thing we didn't talk about is language.
Okay.
And I believe that actually language is based on gift giving. And I've written a lot about this, and that words are verbal gifts, and that syntax is actually a gift construction. And so if we are actually speaking, and that is gift giving and receiving, then we might define ourselves differently if we recognize this, because we think that language is our species-specific characteristic. And if language is based on gift-giving and receiving, then maybe gift-giving and receiving is our species-specific characteristic, and we need to return to it and not consider ourselves only Homo sapiens, as I was saying before, but think of ourselves as a kind of giving being, giving and receiving being.
And is that the Homo donans?
Yeah, the Homo donans. And that makes us, a different definition may help to make us more compassionate and make us realize what parts of ourselves, of our experience, we need to access in order to be in alignment with who we really are.
Well, it would raise our awareness and help us rethink who we can be or who we should be or who we are before things got so warped and out of balance.
Yeah, right. And who we can be again, because we are still that. We just have this huge overlay of patriarchy in the market that we have to be able to get through there somehow.
Okay. Well, Genevieve, thank you so much for sharing all of that on the show tonight. It is my honor to have you on the Four Mothers and Way Showers series. You certainly are one of those and continue to be. Are you working on any particular projects right now that you'd like to share information about?
Well, I'm writing a book on language right now. That's what my main passion is. So that's what I'm doing. We just did a conference in Toronto called A Mother World is Possible, and had a lot of different women from indigenous societies. It was the matriarchal studies and gift economy together. And that was hosted by the Association for Research on Mothering at York University. And we'll have all of that online, too, and you can actually hear all the speeches and everything as soon as we get them up. They're not quite up yet.
So would they go to the gift-economy.com? Is that where it'll be posted?
Yeah, and it's also on motherworldconference.org. But you could find it on either one.
Okay.
There'll be a link on the gifteconomy.com website.
Okay. Well, Genevieve, I invite you to stay with us just a few more minutes. I'm going to wrap up the show, and I'm going to close it out with a song actually dedicated to Sekhmet that comes from Caitlin Breen and Zingaya, some folks out there that I'm not sure if you know them personally, but they're definitely connected to the Sekhmet Temple out there in Nevada.
Oh, great.
So if you're not too tired, hang on for five or six more minutes, and you can hear that song close out the show.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you, Genevieve. I appreciate you and what you're doing. You're like one of those trailblazers with your pink-handled machete, you know, out there blazing a new trail for us so that we can save ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, with my pleasure. Well, listeners, if you've been listening to the show or you're just for some reason tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and we've been talking to Genevieve Vaughn, expert on the gift economy and the founder of the Sekhmet Temple outside Las Vegas. And here on the show, we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the Great She be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and benchmarks just might save the world. Well, because I don't want to keep Genevieve too much longer, we're going to close the show a little bit early tonight. I just want to invite you to check out my website at KarenTate.com. I do have some free meditations there in the spirit of gift economy giving. There are some Sekhmet meditations and some other meditations that people have told me they enjoy. You can find out about my books there as well, and there are wonderful links and articles. So that's KarenTate.com. And as we close for tonight, we're going to listen to the song dedicated to the goddess Sekhmet from Zingaya, a group outside Las Vegas. And this came to me direct from Caitlin Breen. Caitlin, if you're listening, thank you so much, and thank you, Zingaya. So for the next 5 minutes, that's what you'll hear, and I invite you to please come back the first Wednesday of December, where our Four Mothers and Wayshower series will have Pat Monahan on the show. So here's Sekhmet by Zingaya. Enjoy. Well, good night, everyone. Enjoy your harvest this Thanksgiving. Have gratitude for the abundance the mother provides. And start thinking new ways to value yourselves. And think gift economy. And don't forget, hail Sekhmet. Good night.